Last week, the Conval School District sued the state, claiming that lawmakers are failing to fund an adequate education and that local taxpayers are shouldering more than their fair share. Districts across New Hampshire, from Claremont to Pittsfield, have made this argument before. In the first of our series, Adequate, NHPR's Sarah Gibson looks back at the battle over education funding and why it's not over yet.
Pittsfield Superintendent John Freeman didn't used to pay much attention to the State House, but this year he's driving most weeks to Concord to ask lawmakers for more funding for his schools. He signs in at the hearing, then waits in line sometimes for hours to give his spiel.
I really don't get that much of a reaction. I mean, you've been to the legislative hearings. You go and talk, and they thank you, and you go away. You don't really get much. I very rarely even get a question.
But Freeman keeps going back because he says Pittsfield is at a breaking point. Over the last 10 years, it's had to cut teachers and all AP and foreign language classes. And the thing that really gets Freeman is that even with all of these cuts, the local tax rate keeps going up.
The local education tax rate is almost 50% higher over 10 years with a flat budget. That is not right.
And according to some, it's not legal either. That's because of a series of New Hampshire Supreme Court decisions that govern how the state is supposed to fund education. They're called the Claremont cases, named after the Claremont School District, which, along with some other towns, sued the state in the 1990s. One of their lawyers was now executive counselor Andrew Valinsky.
We had a sense that it was a momentous occasion, and there was a lot riding on this.
Valinsky remembers back in the early 90s, when this was all getting started, his team of lawyers took a tour of the schools suing the state.
Allenstown used a converted bathroom for one-on-one sessions for special ed children. So the most stigmatized small child in the school literally went to class in the bathroom. That still haunts me.
Then there was Franklin.
Franklin High couldn't use its high school gym because when you bounce the basketball, the asbestos in the floor rained down on the band class below the gym.
Decades-old textbooks, barely any computers. The Claremont lawyers argued that students in these schools and every school in New Hampshire had a constitutional right to an adequate education. The Supreme Court agreed. This was big, but it didn't solve the problem of who was supposed to fund this education. So the Claremont lawyers went back to court. In 1996, they got teachers to testify in trial. Many were so poorly paid, they had left their schools for better salaries in wealthier districts. One of those teachers was Retta Cullen. She taught for nearly 40 years and is now retired. On the witness stand, Cullen testified that when she taught English at Franklin High School, she was in charge of hiring teachers.
I would stand at the counter and open letters of application, and I remember very clearly the principal saying to me, "Don't bother scheduling interviews with anyone who has more than a bachelor's degree and 5 years of experience, because we can't afford to pay them."
A couple years later, Cullen moved to Guilford High School in a wealthier town with higher pay. There, she became a department head in charge of hiring.
And when the same situation happened at Guilford, I was told, make sure that anyone you interview has at least 5 years of experience and a master's degree. And the disparity was obvious.
This trial got national attention and ended up in the state Supreme Court. In 1997, it issued its decision, known as Claremont II, that changed education funding forever. It said the state has a responsibility to pay for an adequate education, and the taxes to pay for it have to be fair and uniform across the state. It led to an immediate reaction in Concord. Many said the court had overstepped by forcing lawmakers to raise more money, i.e. more taxes, maybe even an income tax.
I have a brief statement that I'm going to answer questions.
A few days later, then-Governor Jeanne Shaheen said she disagreed with the decision.
But I'm confident that the legislative and executive branches, working together on a bipartisan basis, can find a solution.
That solution was up to lawmakers like David Hess.
Okay, Yeah, here's education funding.
Hess was a Republican state representative from Hooksett at the time of the Claremont decision. He keeps a bunch of documents from those years in his basement.
This is about a quarter of what I had.
After Claremont, Hess and a team of lawmakers got to work. He says they calculated they needed to increase spending by around 25%, and they had to figure out how to raise that fast.
It was a big problem. I mean, when you have to find an additional 25% more money than what you appropriated last year out of our tax structure, that is a major issue.
So lawmakers increased various taxes, business, real estate, car rental tax, and then they created something called the Statewide Education Property Tax. This money is technically raised and kept locally through property taxes, but it's considered a state tax, so it allows the state to say, hey, Supreme Court, look at these millions we're raising to help pay for kids. These funds got the state closer to fulfilling its obligation to pay for an adequate education. But what exactly is an adequate education anyway?
We were all riding on an open slate. Nobody had much experience in addressing the issue because the question of what was an adequate education had only been addressed in several states around the country at the time.
Lawmakers came up with a formula, about $3,400 per student per year. They threw in some more if you were special ed or learning English or low income. State education aid did increase, but lawmakers were constantly tinkering with it. And making substantial changes felt impossible because everyone was focused on protecting their own town's pile of money.
Whenever an education bill would come to the House floor, the first thing any member would do would pick up the spreadsheet and say, okay, how is my town going to do under this bill? Is it going to get more money or is it going to get less money? If it gets more money, you have a good chance of getting a vote for the bill. If your town gets less money, chances are you're going to lose a vote for the bill.
Things got tougher during downturns in the economy. In the recession, lawmakers slashed other sources of education funding like school construction aid and teacher retirement benefits. But the formula Hess and other lawmakers helped create, that $3,400 per student, that's still intact, a bit higher now. One of the main debates today is whether it's enough. Schools are spending an average of $18,000 per student. Most of this is funded by local property taxes, and many say the state needs to pay for more. That's Superintendent Freeman's position.
You just have to look at the number and understand what it costs to provide sort of a basic education. It just seems so absurdly inadequate that the joke of it is that it's called an adequacy grant.
His district, Pittsfield, was one of the districts that sued the state in the original Claremont lawsuits. And Freeman says things today aren't much better than 20 years ago.
It's a strong feeling of, in some cases, desperation. People are really at the end of a road here that I think needs a change.
The Convall lawsuit filed last week asks for the state to triple what it sends to districts in adequacy aid. And many bills in the State House are looking to boost it, too. That's going to take a lot more money, and the battle to figure out where that comes from has only begun. For NHPR News, I'm Sarah Gibson.